The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.
Good morning, everyone. Technology and the power of the government. It's hardly a law school seminar or a topic for some pointy-headed conference for futurists, although it might be. It's the reality, though, for the U.S. Supreme Court this week, which begins its new term today. Do police need a warrant to watch you in the digital space? Can the Constitution just be suspended online? And can the federal government make you buy anything, say, an insurance policy for your health care? He's our insurance that we can follow the Supreme Court's weighty agenda this year. Joining us now is Jeff Rosen once again, law professor at George Washington University, legal affairs editor for The New Republic, and author of The Supreme Court, The Personalities and Rivalries That Defined America. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning.
So on this first Monday in October, what do you think is the biggest piece of the agenda that we're likely to see with the Supreme Court this term?
Well, as you said, the big theme is the power of the federal government, and the most exciting case that the court has taken so far, I think, is that GPS privacy case. This really could redefine the scope of online privacy and privacy in a digital age. It just couldn't be more interesting. Shall I get a sense of what's going on there?
Well, let me just frame it for a second. I mean, normally we understand that for police to watch people, to get a wiretap, for instance, and to actually monitor individuals in a way that encroaches on their privacy, police need typically a warrant. But with the proliferation of technology, it's a much more passive exercise to watch people in this day and age. And the question is, do police need a warrant to look at the huge digital trail that all of us leave, particularly with the GPS, where you can actually locate a car anywhere in the world?
That's exactly the issue. And in this case, the police suspected a guy of dealing drugs. They secretly put a GPS device on his car and tracked his movements 24/7 for a month. It was really extensive tracking. In that case, they did get a warrant, but it was invalid. They served it too late, and they served it in the wrong state. So we have to assume that there was no warrant. And the question is, do you need a warrant before you can do 24/7 ubiquitous tracking? The courts disagreed. Two lower courts said you have no expectation of privacy in public. Because it's theoretically possible for your neighbors to track you or for the cops to put a tail on you, you have to assume the risk that the police are doing the same thing with the use of a GPS device. But in an opinion, and I won't hide what I think about it, I'll call it a visionary opinion on the other side, a court in D.C. disagreed and said there's a huge difference between a snapshot of your movements with a tail that lasts for 100 miles and 24/7 surveillance for a month. And we do have an expectation of privacy in the whole of our movements. The cops could learn our travel patterns, our reading patterns, who we associate with or not. And therefore, for that degree of intensive surveillance, you do need a warrant. Those are the stakes in that case.
What is the trigger? I mean, I assume the police can just set up a sort of Google search command and sort of watch you constantly on Google and other sort of search engines without a warrant. But why does GPS sort of tip this into another zone?
Because the GPS lasts so long and goes so deep. The fact that literally you're being tracked in a kind of dragnet for an entire month and all of your movements are being revealed, the argument goes, requires a warrant. And Google searches might raise a similar question. I was at a conference at Google a few years ago where the head of public policy, he expected Google to be asked to put online all public and private surveillance cameras. And if those feeds were stored, you could click on a picture of anyone, back-click on them to see where they were coming from, forward-click on them to see where they were going, basically track them ubiquitously at all time. I think many people would think that should require some kind of warrant before the cops could engage in that sort of dragnet as well.
Well, a huge theme for the court is we'll get a chance to see if the court is capable of being out in front of technological transformations that are happening so rapidly. This is really the first chance to see how much they want to be in front of this, or are they just going to be reactive? But the other huge issue that we expect to come before the court, it's actually not there now, although it's heading there, is a discussion of the Commerce Clause vis-a-vis health care. What's that all about?
Yes, so the Obama administration has asked the court to review once and for all the constitutionality of the health care mandate. Three lower courts have heard the question. One has struck down the mandate. One said that there was no standing to hear the case. And in a big surprise, a third, the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati, in an opinion by a conservative judge, Jeff Sutton, actually upheld the mandate and said, rejecting the argument of many conservatives, that the decision not to buy insurance is not an economic activity and therefore can't be regulated by Congress under its power to regulate interstate commerce. Sutton said that there's no meaningful difference between a tax incentive to buy insurance, which everyone concedes is constitutional, and a mandate to buy it. And he said the decision not to buy clearly has huge economic effects. Healthcare is 17.6% of the economy, $2.5 trillion. And basically, he said conservative judges shouldn't be activists. We've criticized liberals for doing this for a long time, and he upheld the mandate. So that's going to go to the Supreme Court, and we'll see what they say.
At the very least, Jeff Rosen, is the fact that three circuits are all over the map on this, does that increase the urgency that the Supreme Court decide once and for all whether the federal government can force you to buy insurance, health care insurance?
Yes. I mean, the Supreme Court takes cases when there's a serious disagreement among the lower courts, and that combined with the very unusual step of the Obama administration asking for expedited consideration makes it very likely that the court will decide health care by June, and the decision might come down, you know, it's just as the presidential election is heating up. The political implications could be argued all sorts of ways, but it couldn't be more dramatic and significant for the Obama administration.
Oh, goody, a decision right in the middle of the presidential campaign. Finally, Jeff Rosen, let's look at the nine justices themselves. Are we likely to see tests of splits and coalitions based on the cases that are coming before the case, conservative, liberal, other kinds of combinations and coalitions?
Absolutely. Three of the conservative justices, Alito, Roberts, and Scalia, have taken a pretty expansive view of Congress's power and executive power, in contrast to Thomas and Kennedy, who are more libertarian. So you could, in the healthcare decision, have a lopsided decision upholding it. In the GPS case, there have been some libertarian justices who have voted against the police in search and seizure cases, and you might even find a lopsided decision ruling against the warrants. Now, I'm not predicting there. That's a sort of dream scenario for liberals and libertarians, but we should not necessarily expect that these cases are going to be decided on 5-4 grounds.
And because there are a new set of issues, at least compared with the last couple of sessions, as well as some newer justices, it's going to be a big reveal of the various personalities here.
It hugely will. Justice Kagan, who was just had such an incredible debut last year with her very sparkling prose, is going to show her hand. She was willing to really get out there last term. And with the cases involving immigration and possibly even affirmative action and gay marriage and gay adoption, it could shape up to be a real blockbuster term, quite dramatic indeed.
Jeff Rosen's excited. Law professor at George Washington University, legal affairs editor for the New Republic, and author of The Supreme Court, The Personalities and Rivalries That Defined America. The new term gets started today. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Pleasure.